Hey, everybody, it's Rick. And if you're enjoying the Vertafore Insurance podcast, you should definitely check out Accelerate, powered by NetView. This is our huge InsurTech conference happening in April of 2020. And it is the event to attend for everything from networking, thought leadership, learning how to grow your agency, meeting new technology partners, and much, much more. Accelerate is happening in Minneapolis from April 29th through May 2nd. And you can learn more at www.netviewaccelerate.com. That's all one word, netviewaccelerate.com.
Welcome to the Vertafore Insurance Podcast with Rick Fox. We're here to talk about the industry with some of its biggest influencers. From technology, trends, and current events, if it's happening in insurance, you'll hear about it here. Make sure to tune in every week and join in on the conversation with us on social media at Vertafore. And now, here's Rick Fox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vertafore Insurance Podcast, the VIP. I'm the host, Rick Fox, and today's guest, Mr. Seth Preuss. He is an advisor for Myvation, has been around this industry for a long time. And I'm really excited to get this conversation going with him, talk about kind of, you know, sales comp structure, how to motivate people in the agency and really kind of take your teams to the next level. So without any further ado, Seth, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Rick. I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So let's dig right in. I think the best way I always do this, and I think it really helps set the tone for kind of why you're an expert in what you are, is to sort of tell your journey. Tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are today and you know, what that was like.
Sure. So my journey in sales actually starts when I was 18 years old, and I started selling Kirby vacuum cleaners door to door in rural New Mexico. And I actually dropped out of college with straight A's to do that, which proves that you can apparently get straight A's and not be very smart. So, but I learned a tremendous amount.
Wait a minute, hold on, Seth, hold on. Does that, you're actually saying you went into sales and that you're not very smart. I think that is redundant, right? I mean, all of us sales guys are not, no one's given us the Einstein Award over here in sales. I'm kidding, but that I just had to poke fun at, because I've been a salesperson for a long time as well.
Yeah, so you know how it is. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but that was a great experience, because it doesn't get any more fundamental than selling vacuum cleaners door to door. Wow. So my future wife talked some sense into me, and I returned to college and wrapped up with my degree, and ended up working for a technology startup that was owned and funded by Robert Kraft, the guy that owns the Patriots.
Oh, yeah.
And at the age of, I think I was about 24 at the time, and I had on paper a net worth of several million dollars. And the day before we were scheduled to go public, the market crash of 1999 occurred and wiped out everything. So it was painful, but it kind of opened my eyes to the technology world. I left there, went and did a stint consulting for Accenture, and then watched a buddy of mine who was making almost as much money as me, but had a heck of a lot more free time in the insurance industry. And so I made a radical career switch, came over to insurance, started my agency in 2003, but I couldn't shake that technology bug. And it didn't take long before I started developing software tools that could be used by insurance agents. And my niche was providing tools for productivity, so that you could see who's selling what in your office, where are your sales coming from, what's your ROI, that kind of stuff.
Really cool.
Especially compensation plans for sub-producers. That was where we really shined. And those little spreadsheets that I made in Excel made their way around the country, and I ended up forming a company, turned it over to my best friend and business partner and my wife to run. And it's been plugging away ever since, growing rapidly all through all 50 states and Canada. We rebranded recently as Myvation, and we still focus on making productivity tools for sales teams, mostly in the insurance and financial services, but really focused on how do you get people to want to do more.
And I think that's such a great story. And you know, I really always appreciate it when someone's willing to say, hey, I failed at something. Or, you know, in this case, the market took me to a different place and I learned from that. Because through that process of growth and maturity, experience, whatever you want to call it, as we get older, there's always one or two, maybe 10 times in our careers where something has shifted our path, made us pivot. Usually I find, and I've been through a few of those myself, I find that it's always for the better. It might be tough when you're going through it, but you come out with a better understanding of where you want to go and a better understanding of who you are. So I'm excited to have this conversation. You clearly come from a place of experience, having, you know, been on the side of the vacuum cleaner salesperson, man. That's got to be one of the toughest gigs out there. And if you can actually do that, then I figure you can pick up the phone and call just about anybody and work. So, and I've always said about salespeople, and maybe this will play into what you're talking about, but I've always categorized salespeople in two different ways. Number one is you've got the grinders, right? You got the people they'll just grind. They work hard and they get after it. And then I've got that other group of people that are just naturally really, really good salespeople. And when I've built teams in the past, I've always looked for somebody that was both. And that's hard to find. And it's really hard to find in masses, especially if you're looking for, you know, producers or someone to, if you're really going big, trying to get your agency to grow. So I'm excited to kind of talk through with you the ways that people can, what motivational tools people can use and the way that you see the structure working to get the most out of everybody. So I want to start with this question. It's a question to you, but it's as if you're answering it for the entire population of agent or agency owners or people that run teams. And it's this: how do you motivate independent producers? Independent being the part where maybe they're with you, maybe it's their own book, whatever. They're part of what you're doing. How do you motivate them if they're really not maybe working for you?
Yeah, that's an excellent question.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. So this question of how do you motivate people is not, you know, relegated to just the insurance industry. I mean, Amazon lists 50,000 titles on motivation. So it's a big question on everyone's mind. But here's the thing, is that the dirty little secret is that motivation is really just a fancy word for wanting, and you can't make somebody want something. And so the stress of trying to figure out how to motivate people is misdirected, because you can't actually make them want something. What you can do is you can provide triggers and move their motivation, but their motivation has to come from inside of them. And so a lot of the way that you can do the best job, especially when you're looking at motivating on scale, meaning that you're not having sit down conversations with each person on a quarterly basis to try to figure out what it is that they want, but is to try to hit on as many motivational triggers as you can, and then they'll react to the ones that they feel the strongest about.
So
it's a very balanced approach.
Yeah, and we do a lot of these podcasts, and you know what's funny is I was listening to one the other day. I was on the plane, and I was just to the point that we make where we're always trying to get better. And while Dylan can vouch for the fact that I really do like to listen to my own voice because I talk a lot, what I was really doing was listening to see if there are ways that I could get better. So when you say that kind of stuff, we have guests on, we have great guests on all the time, and they almost make it sound simple, right? Like this is the easy way, because it's the way that, I mean, there's a reason they're on the podcast. There's a reason you're on the podcast. You're very good at what you do. And those people that say, yeah, it's really easy. You just have to do this, this, and this. So I really want, like, I've always say this, but I really want people to take something away from this. So you and I were having a conversation at a different point, and we were talking about specific kinds of motivators, and we were talking about the differences between intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. Those are big words, but I want you to kind of dig, because this is kind of where you live, right? And I really want you to dig into kind of the differences between those, because again, I want people to not go, well, that sounds really easy, and then think it is, because none of this is easy, and it all takes work. But what we're hoping to do right now is build you a roadmap that helps you get to that place where your team is, you know, firing, where you're bringing in better talent, where you're getting the most out of your existing talent. So talk to me about the differences between intrinsic and extrinsic motivation or motivators, I guess.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. These are big sounding words, but it's a fairly simple concept wrapped up in them. The extrinsic rewards, and you hear that X, it's external. And so
let's define that. So when you say motivators, do you mean rewards? Are those synonymous when you say that?
Yeah,
so
they tend to be synonymous. And the reason for that is that you'll see that for the extrinsic, the you want the reward, the money. On the intrinsic side, the want, the reward is the same thing.
Got it.
And
okay,
so,
good.
Yeah. And so what most people focus on is the extrinsic part, frankly, because it's easier. It's very easy to just say, okay, I'm going to pay you more money if you do, you know, this amount of work. And so, you know, I talked before about how I spent a lot of time designing compensation plans. And I'm often asked for what's the magic formula for greater compensation. And so I don't really think there is one, but I did some analysis of about 25,000 users of one of our systems. And what we discovered was that we could break down what would result in higher production by various parts of the application. And for instance, if you had some kind of variable compensation in place, which is an extrinsic motivator, money, they had roughly 10% higher production than those who did not have any kind of variable comp.
Okay.
If you had public goals, so personal public goals that everyone in the office could see, you had roughly 12% greater production.
Okay. Wow. When you say that, you mean like there's a board posted or it's on the company intraweb or like what when you say posted, talk to me about what you've seen and what's really worked to get that extra sort of that extra oomph.
Yeah. Two parts of it.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about goals, the first part is that it has to be set collaboratively with the rep. Okay. You assign it, it's a target. Okay. They may or may not take that seriously, but if it's a goal, it means they've made a personal commitment. Okay. So that is what ties into one of these intrinsic motivators, which is accountability, that people like to feel like they do what they say they're going to do. They're reliable. It's important to you inside to be reliable. So if they make that commitment and everyone sees that, it actually has a greater influence on them to reach that production than money does.
You know, the word you just used there, which to me is the word of the hour. It's the word of, like, I use it in my house with my children. I use it with the people on my team. The word's accountability, and people dig it. Like, parts of it scare you or make you nervous because you're being held accountable, but especially in the sales world, like if you and I said, hey, let's come up with the number and then let's hit that number together. And you're my boss and you gave me that number and I said, heck yeah, let me go drill a hole in that. Man, that's better. It's so much more powerful for me to reach than it is for you to go, hey, new guy, here's your number. Go get it.
Exactly.
I love the way you're describing it. And, you know, the words again are intrinsic versus extrinsic. They're these big words. But when you dumb it down to just the personal, the nature of people, it just makes sense, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Intrinsic is very much based upon how you are connected to the work itself, how you feel about the work itself, and frankly, about your own self-image and how you feel about yourself. And how people feel about themselves is a greater influencer than simply making money. Money in particular, I mean, numerous studies have shown that once somebody reaches a certain level of financial comfort, future financial incentives fail to have a large impact on their decision making because it doesn't matter that much anymore. It's what I like to call it's fickle. I mean, it depends.
Well, so, isn't that funny that if we could only think of an industry where we have producers that have been around for a long time that have reached a certain level and are basically living off of that level that they've reached. Gosh. Oh, yeah, right. Insurance. Here it is.
Exactly. Yeah, you nailed it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so, go ahead. I want to hear more.
Yeah. So it's, I just want to back up to something you said earlier, because you hit on something that I talk about quite a bit, is that accountability is often used as a word to bludgeon people into doing things. And it has this negative connotation, but it really shouldn't be, because accountability is how you establish trust, that you do what you say you're going to do. And that enables other people to rely on you and know that you're up for the job. And it's very important for people to feel that sense of accountability. And not everybody does. And so, you know, that's one of the things that you need to look for when you're hiring sales reps is, and let me give you a very brief example.
Yeah.
Do they show up on time? Because if they don't show up on time, they'll get in trouble. Or do they show up on time because that's what responsible people do?
Yeah.
So you need that ladder as a foundation.
Well, and I've always used this as sort of a barometer for hiring. And it's funny because I've mentioned on the show a few times, one of the things I did back in a previous life was I owned a restaurant and a bar, and I was totally not involved, but I was part of the ownership group, and I would be the guy that would randomly get a call at midnight or one in the morning from some person saying, "Hey, the toilet's plugged up. Well, get the plunger and fix it." Right. Take responsibility. But what I learned from that experience of those people, that's a different employee. That is someone who is not striving for one of the two things that our producer should be striving for. One, to your point, success and just validation from their coworkers or their boss or whatever. And the other thing is that almighty dollar. People working at a different level are looking for the paycheck and when can they get off work so they do their own thing. So, like, to your point, I believe in finding the right person that comes to work, like you said, on time, because they want to be there and they want to succeed. Find that person, start there, then exactly. Add these motivators and wow, right?
That's exactly right. That's the foundation that you build on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's great. Okay. So before we put a bow on these motivators, these rewards, let me just, you've been talking about the intrinsic side, and I'm with you. Like I'm fully bought into that, but talk to me about why the extrinsic motivators are less effective. This might be your opinion, but, or maybe you have a stat around it, but talk to me about why they're less effective.
Well, one of the biggest reasons is that they're very difficult to match to the motivation of a particular individual. Like when you're just using money, what is their level of materialism? What is their standard of living? What did they make last year? What does their spouse make? I mean, you offer a big bonus for hitting a goal. Well, what happens if their spouse gets a $2 million inheritance? You know, it's impacted by so many different things. And so the thing with intrinsic motivators is they're very much about how a person feels about their own job, mastery, which is that they're getting good at it and that they want to be even better, or that they're making progress in their career. Those things are enduring and they last without management continuously having to dangle various types of carrots in front of them to get them to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's my other complaint about the extrinsic rewards is as soon as you take them away, then the motivation goes away. Wow. And there is no reason for them to
That's
do
so
it.
True. That's so and, true. Or, you know, so, or as soon as they reach a certain point of that reward,
exactly,
then the motivation goes away.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you need to have it built upon something more enduring that is from within them and isn't reliant upon managers to stoke that motivation.
All right. So on this show, we always talk about takeaways and getting, you know, everyone leaving with something that they can do right away. And so I kind of layer this in. It's like the top layer would be the agency principal. The middle layer would be a sales manager level. And then the third layer would be that producer, whether they're an actual, independent, they have their own book that work within your agency, or if it's one of your on staff producers, the sales managers working to get better. So here's let's give a takeaway here. What's the and let's talk about from the top two levels, or maybe the bottom level that could ask for something. What's the easiest way a manager or an owner, principal, can have an impact upon the motivation of their team? Give me something that's like, bam, let's go do that. And what's the easiest way?
Okay, yeah, so this will come in two parts. And so one sounds kind of fluffy and the other one's just straight up data. So the easiest way to have an impact is to give positive feedback to those who have demonstrated a real accomplishment of some sort, a genuine accomplishment.
And is that feedback to them individually, or is that feedback to them with everyone else around, or both?
It works better if you do it with everyone else around. But even individually is better than nothing. One of the biggest complaints that people have in the working world is that they 51%, according to Gallup, feel like they don't get appreciation for what they do at work.
That's very true. And
I believe there's a lot of people who don't receive any whatsoever, but I think part of that problem is not that they're not appreciated. It's that the managers just don't do a great job of communicating it. And this is the second part to my answer. I think a big part of the reason that they don't communicate it is because they don't know about it. And so where I see sales teams really falling down is that they don't have data to show these accomplishments. And so especially when you've got new reps that are being trained and are getting better and better, it's not enough to just measure them on whether they hit their goal or not. I mean, if you're trying to develop them, what you want to be doing is seeing that they're making progress and that they're getting better, not just at closing sales, but also on those leading indicator activities that will ultimately lead to sales. So imagine that you can recognize that they've done more quotes in a day than they ever have before, or that they've done the most quotes in the office in a month than anyone has before, or their own personal best. All these data points provide a way for you to stoke that motivation and to show them that they're doing the right things to progress in their career. So,
wow,
but you got to know what to give it on. And that's where the data comes in.
That is such a positive way to look at it. And something that, like I said, if you're listening in right now and you're either an owner, principal, you're a manager, start doing that right now. If you're a producer who's not getting that, go talk to your manager, go talk to the principal of the agency and say, listen, I want to be better. I want you to guide me in that direction. And then when I do well, I want you to make sure I know about it. I think that's all very positive stuff. And like, I'd be shocked if someone took, you know, even little morsels from this conversation and didn't see a tick up in their productivity because they're more motivated, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So let's shift gears slightly here. This is still kind of the same concept, but I have a word I want to throw out to you, and I want you to kind of describe to me how you've seen it work. I'm really interested in it. And I kind of do some of this with like my children and stuff because they're so digital native at this point. But let's talk about gamification and why a business should not would, but should be interested in this. So talk to me about your take on gamification in the same context of what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So gamification, I think, is sometimes incorrectly described as a way to make work more fun and engaging. I don't look at it that way. That's not the way that I've implemented it through software in the past. What gamification means to me is that you look at what those intrinsic motivators are for somebody who plays sports, like that they want to be good, they're competitive, they want to be getting better, they recognition that, a lot of that kind of stuff, and build that into a software with the objective of getting every single person who's participating to do just a little bit better than they normally would. So if you think about the simplest form of gamification that most agencies are familiar with, it would be a sales competition.
Right.
And so, but the thing is, to properly implement gamification, the objective of a good sales competition isn't just to identify and reward the top people. The objective is to make more money. And the best way to make more money is to get everybody in the competition to do just a little bit better than they normally would. You move the middle, you move the whole company.
Yes.
And so, so properly implemented gamification is about figuring out ways to keep everybody in that competition motivated. And so it's kind of fun because it can be everything from having a chance to win spontaneous rewards from completing leading indicator activities. You know, so let's say you could base a sales competition on volume, but then you would have a chance for them to win, a chance to spin a prize wheel every time they do a quote. That's a way that you keep them engaged in the competition and doing maybe a little bit more than they normally would, because there's this chance to maybe win a prize wheel, even if they can't win the competition, that sort of thing.
Well, and I always try to like tie that into like lay terms. You know, I've used Netflix and Amazon, and when we talk about data and how they use that and things like that. But when you were saying that, the first thing I thought about was, so I'm a, you know, I travel a lot. So I'm a Marriott rewards person and I'm a Delta Airlines rewards person. So, and they've, those two companies have done such a good job of it within their app of gamifying my status and how close I am to the next thing that I'm like, that I'm like, oh my gosh, if I just fly two more legs, I'm going to move to gold, you know, that it's, and that's what you're talking like when you build it that way, tell me that person isn't going to go that extra inch, that extra foot, that extra mile to get to the next level or to pass Bob or to pass Sue or to do like to me, that is it sounds silly when you say gamify a sales team, but that's the way of the world. I think it's genius. And, but now let me ask you this question. All right. You've seen it. You've seen people that have done it and obviously been successful using it. Is there negative consequences? That could be part of this to answer the question, if there's whether or not there's a way this thing goes south.
Yeah, if you run the same sales competitions with the same individuals on the same metrics, you're going to get a lot of the same results. And so when you properly gamify, especially if we're talking about sales reps, you've got to figure out ways to match people by skill level or by grouping them into teams or by pairing sales and service people through points, et cetera, so that you're shaking it up and you're making sure that people are always in an environment in which they could possibly win. Because how many times do you have to run a race against Usain Bolt before you don't really try that hard?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about you, Seth. I think I got a shot. I think I might have a shot.
I don't.
So here's what I think. And let me just kind of put a bow on everything that you've said. I think this is great. And I think there's people out there that are right now that are like, just simply asking, either they're asking the rest of their team or they're asking themselves, how do we get better? And I think you've laid out a roadmap here that makes a lot of sense. Like it isn't rocket science, but it's laid out in a way to me that is like, if you're looking for next level, start trying some of these things. Don't just say, hey, I want my people to sell more. Let me give them a higher cut or let me pay a higher base. Right. It's all of those intrinsic things that you're talking about. It's reward within the team. It's gamifying the process and not making that stale. I think it's great. I mean, I really think this is top-notch stuff. I know you go around the country and you talk about this and you're speaking at shows. And I know you're also involved in the financial services industry. But instead of telling me why you do that, or I think I know because I can tell you're passionate about what you do, tell me what people come up to you and say when you're like at that show. Do they, you know, talk to me about where, you know, it's like, hey, Seth, I just want to say that, man, we listened to you 6 months ago and we've revolutionized the way we are. Like, what is it that people are coming up to you and kind of giving you as feedback for all of this stuff to me, which sounds like, if you're not going to go try this tomorrow, you're missing an opportunity. Right. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, I think that what I hear the most often is some variation of, I have never heard motivation described in quite that way. And you're exactly right that that's how it works.
That's the way I feel.
And I think that a big part of the reason people say that is that I don't come at this from the attitude of that you just need to change your mind, positive thinking, you know, just get in the right mindset. I lay out a very pragmatic approach that's based on accountability and then built upon by developing your skills, being patient, working hard, and that through over time, these things work in conjunction with each other to get to the point where you're actually as passionate about what you do as I am about what I do.
Boom. Nailed it. Mic drop. That was a mic drop right there. Cause to me that word accountability is, you know, like it can have a little negative connotation, but not if you turn it around and hold yourself accountable. And what I think, what I love about this and the things that you said is I made a joke about it earlier, but you're thinking about that producer who's been at the same level and he's losing about 10% off the back every year. And he's putting about 10% on, he's golfing 3 days a week. He's got his lifestyle. I would say from my perspective, and maybe others have other triggers in their own lives, I've got a senior in high school. We are knee deep right now in college applications. And the only thing that I see in the in those applications is dollar signs. So that doesn't motivate me to, like, it isn't the motivator in the extrinsic way, like I need to make more money, but it is to me personally intrinsic in its sense that I need to do better. I need to be more prepared. And so if you look at it, just shift your thinking. It's such a great way to look at it. Okay. Seth, unbelievable content. We'll definitely try to get you back on the show again and go deeper into this. But if people are really wanting more, you know, how do they find you? Is it LinkedIn the best way, or what's the best way to get a hold of you or in your company?
Actually, LinkedIn would be a great way to get a hold of me personally. To get a hold of the company, it would be through the website at www.myvation.com.
Okay. And it's Preuss, but it's Preuss, spelled, yep. it looks like kind of like Prius. So let me spell it for you. It's Seth, Preuss. And Seth, my man, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'm going to end this the way I always do with one final question. We're going to record this next little bit. We're going to bury it. Somebody's going to uncover it in a month, in a year. What is Seth Preuss's one big piece of advice for the insurance industry?
I would say that it is to remember that the insurance industry is built upon people helping other people, and that as you explore new technologies to streamline your processes and get more efficient, choose those technologies and build them around people, the people you serve and the people who work for your organization.
Yeah, that's another great mic drop. All right. Hey, everybody out there, thanks for listening in. Seth Preuss, so happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Don't forget to everybody out there to subscribe. We are now just doing gangbusters on Spotify, along with the Google and obviously Apple. Go subscribe, rate it if you like it, review it, tell us what you think. Send me a note on LinkedIn and give us some feedback. I'm getting a lot of that and it's very positive. I've gotten a couple of people that we have lined up to be on the show are by recommendation from those notes. But we appreciate everybody out there. I think I might have mentioned this on a different episode. We just flew past 10,000 downloads on this show, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. So glad everybody's a part of it. Again, Seth, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you very much for having me, Rick.
Thank you for listening to the Vertifor Insurance Podcast, and tune in next Thursday for a brand new episode. You can find more episodes at vertifor.com under the Resources tab or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, and if you enjoyed this episode, share it on social and spread the word. Don't forget to join in on the conversation and recommend future guests by messaging us at Vertifor.